I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Real Salt Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Hanson Scotty, 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. Live here at Tri-Day Trading. Go to tridaytrading.com. Great insight, great information. $10 gets you 30 days of great coaching. And then at the end of 30 days, you can decide if you want to proceed or not. But you get so much great insight and analysis in those 30 days. Really helps you make an educated decision on what you want to do. But there's so many people that have helped change their lives due to Tri-Day Trading. You owe it to yourself to give it a shot. All right. The NCAA. This is interesting. The timing cracks me up. So the Division I Council relaxes restrictions for FBS football conference championship games. FBS conferences can determine their championship game participants, and it does not have to be division winners. Now, by the way, in the release from the NCAA, they said all council actions are not final until today's meeting ends. The meeting is not ended yet. It's still going on. There's a couple other things that are going to come out. We talked about one in particular while you were gone, where probably over the next 2 years they're going to allow teams to not be capped on the amount of scholarships that they offer per year. So if a team has been hit really hard with the transfer portal and they say, well, you can only have 25, only offer up to 25 new scholarships, they're going to say over the next 2 years, you add as many as you want to get your number back up to 85. If you need to add 30 scholarships, go crazy. Get it up to 85. So that's probably going to come down later today as well. But this is not official yet. But 2 minutes after the NCAA announces that the council advises this, the Pac-12 said, guess what? Boom. Divisions are still going to be in the Pac-12, but that's not going to determine your conference winner. In fact, they will take the two highest-ranked teams will play for a conference championship.
Your winning percentages.
Not necessarily, and not who won each division.
Mm-hmm.
This means that in the 11 Pac-12 championship game hands, if you were to apply these rules to those previous 11 games, you would have had five different Pac-12 championship games. So last year, Oregon and Utah played. No change. Those two teams would have played in the championship game. The year before, it was USC and Washington. Instead, it would have been USC and Colorado playing in a championship game.
Now, just so everybody understands, that was during the COVID year.
Correct.
You had, whatever it was, seven games, I think, that were played. And Colorado and Colorado and Washington had the same record, but Colorado was 3-1 in conference play. And I think Washington had one more loss in conference play. But you know, there are going to be tiebreakers and things that work on that winning percentage. They'll go to conference games, not just full records. But
yeah,
that's Colorado would edge them out.
Year before that, in 2019, Utah played Oregon. That would have stayed the same. There would have been no change there. Year before that, in 2018, though, it was Washington and Utah when Utah played in their first Pac-12 championship game. If these rules applied, Utah would not have been in that game. It would have been Washington and Washington State playing for a championship. The 2 years before that, USC and Stanford and Washington, Colorado, there would have been no change there. In 2015, instead of Stanford and USC, it would have been Stanford and Oregon. 2 years before that, no change. Oregon, Arizona, Stanford, Arizona State, that would have stayed the same. But in 2012, instead of Stanford, UCLA, it would have been Oregon and Stanford. And in 2011, instead of Oregon and UCLA, it would have been Stanford and Oregon playing in that championship game.
So
about
very,
half.
Very likely you'll have two Northern. Very likely you have two Southern. It just doesn't play out the way it used to. So I like it. Give it to the two teams that did the best in their winning percentage.
I agree.
That's how it should be.
Yep.
What I guess would it be the NBA that was kind of our first example of taking out divisions and going with percentages?
I mean, they're still technically divisions, but
right.
But
yeah, those are only used for tiebreakers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it used to be division champions used to get
the higher seed.
The higher seed.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's worked well in the NBA. I think that that's the way it needs to be. You can't hide inside of a division that might have lesser competition.
Yeah.
And just because you're in that division with lesser competition and you only have to rotate through two South teams or you know, because you get these Pac-12 rotations where you're going to avoid an Oregon and possibly a Washington in a given year, and you're going to have an Oregon State and, you know, potentially a Washington State. And teams have been able to hide behind that a little bit.
Yeah.
Whatever division they're in. I like it. Give it to the best. Highest percentage.
I think, by the way, and I tweeted this out when this news hit, and then, you know, a minute later, the Pac-12 makes their big announcement that they are going to do away with it. Most conferences are going to do this, by the way. It just, especially in this day and age of college football playoff, where you're really trying to boost resumes of teams to really position themselves for a college football playoff or a New Year's Six, you want to give your champion the best competition out there. And you really want to give them the best opportunity to be successful, and playing a really good team in your conference championship game is certainly going to help in that regard, especially in the ACC when you got Clemson and a bunch of dogs. You know, it's just, you know, try to help, because, you know, if the second best team is in Clemson's division, then make Clemson go through them again.
Yeah. Yeah. Challenge them a little bit. People that might be worried about, oh, this is going to work out poorly for Utah, or this is going to work out well for Utah, I think it probably all averages out.
I mean, frankly, if I believe if this applied to the Mountain West, Utah State wouldn't have been in a conference championship game this year. A game that they went on to win decidedly over San Diego State. So it's going to give and it's going to take. I mean,
it's going to hurt.
It's going to hurt and it's going to help in some cases.
And there's going to be a time where Utah gets in inside, you know, being second place in what would have been the Southern Division, and they get in with USC instead of having to force that Northern team into that Pac-12 championship game. I like the way it works, and I hope that it does move across all conferences. The Big 12 played inside this no division play, right?
Yeah.
And they just went highest winning percentage? With their 10 teams?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
I thought that they, because I thought that was kind of the first conference.
They got a waiver to do it or something like that.
Yeah, it was, because for a while they were saying if you didn't have a divisional championship, then you weren't eligible for certain things. And I think that the Pac-12 is in on, with the announcement coming literally 1 minute after the announcement, it tells me that the new Pac-12 commissioner is on top of things. I think George Kliavkov is. I don't know if we see that announcement this quick with Larry Scott. I wonder if there's more debate.
All right. So look, we've booked all of you a lot of rooms in the in the Four Seasons here in San Francisco. Why don't everybody come here? It's on the conference dime. We'll spend a lot of money. We'll have some great dinners, and we're all going to sit over the next 3 or 4 days and really hammer out if this is something we should be doing. Where George Kolovkov's like, it's a no-brainer. Let's just go.
It's best for our conference. Yeah. Let's go. And then Larry Scott and his crew, after all of that, would have delayed.
And then they'd say, well, what's the SEC doing? Well, they're getting rid of divisions. All right. We're doing this too. Yeah.
I like that. The Pac-12 announcement came right now.
Yeah.
That shows me that they're...
When's the last time Pac-12's been first making an announcement? Never.
That's why... Because I actually saw your retweet. Because I retweeted that the other thing that just said, you know, you can now You don't have to have divisional opponents in a conference championship game. I retweeted that, and I was actually shocked how quick the Pac-12 announcement came.
Literally within 5 minutes.
Because we've never seen it.
Yeah.
So I think it's an indicator that this new operation, this new front office is a little bit out in front of things. Maybe they want to be more innovators than followers, and that's potentially a good thing. I'm hoping that this conference continues to improve itself and continues to show that it has leadership, continues to show that it has growth, because I'm frankly disgusted by the Pac-12's inability to represent in a college football playoff in so many different opportunities. And by the way, I also hope that this commissioner says, you know, everything else is kind of nice, but winning is probably most important in our conference. So let's make winning and being competitive top priority here. Number one. Everything else will be really nice and is important, but winning is number one. That's what the SEC does. The SEC is like, hey, I know that there's a lot of issues going on in this world, but what we need to do is win.
Yeah.
Because if we win, then we get money. And if we win, we get notoriety and attention. And then we can flex a muscle.
Yeah. And when you win and you get more money, then it makes it easier to continue to win.
Yeah.
And then we build up, you know.
Exactly.
What we need to do.
Meanwhile, the Pac-12 has just fallen behind. They are the fifth wheel.
Yeah.
And it sucks. It sucks how often they've been left out of that conference, or sorry, that championship tournament.
By the way, I saw somebody pull a stat earlier today, and this just, I mean, if you're the Pac-12, this is completely unacceptable, but there have been 26 games since 2019 between the Mountain West Conference and the Pac-12. Do you know what you want to take a guess as to what the Pac-12 record is in those 26 games?
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
11 and 15.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, you gotta be kidding me. 11 and 15?
Against the Mountain West in the last 26 games.
The Pac-12. In fact, I just saw this in my notes this morning. Let me pull this up. The Pac-12 last year, Scotty, you ready for this?
Yeah.
The Pac-12 last year went 0-2 against the Big 12, 0-5 against BYU, 0-3 against Notre Dame, 1-3 against the Big Ten, 5-5 against Mountain West Conference. Pac-12 went 5-5 against the Mountain West Conference, 7-2 against FCS, 7-2, and then they went 2-1 against the SEC. And I can't remember the three SEC games.
No, I can't either.
But 2-1, and if I remember right, they were one of them was Oregon, Ohio State, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, good.
So that would be probably your biggest one. But they were abysmal in their out-of-conference games.
The other news coming out, and I just mentioned this, and sure enough, it just hit the wire, too, that the NCAA is going to allow football signings up to 85. So don't worry about your individual limits. You know, normally it's 25 or whatever the case is every single year. If you need to get to 85, you can do it right now. Over the next 2 years. So for teams getting hit hard with the transfer portal, and this is the NCAA's way of saying, look, there's some teams out there with coaching moves and the one free transfer that's really wrecked some teams. in terms of their scholarship numbers, and they need to get them up, then this is going to allow for these schools to get back to 85 as quickly as they need to.
There's a lot of moving and grooving, and I think we're going to continue to see things change. It just feels volatile. Everybody's trying to catch up with new trends and things that were decimated by COVID, things that have been decimated by the transfer portal, things that have been so dramatically changed with NIL. All of these things are going to continue to force change.
Yeah.
And, you know, we hope that things will shake out for the best for college football. That actually, I think, is a good thing to have.
Yeah. No, this makes a lot. I mean, I was talking to Blake Anderson about this, and he said his first year when he took over at Arkansas State, he had a ton of players leave, a lot of attrition. He was down to like 58 scholarships.
Because you're limited to the 25.
Yeah, and so
was it 24 or 25?
25. But because, you know, you lose also seniors and other, you know, he said it took him like 3 or 4 years to finally get it built up to when it was back in the 80s. And now you can get that taken care of within a year or so. So it makes a lot of sense, especially with so much movement. You've got to allow, if you're going to allow players to move around, which they should, and I have no problem with it. If you're going to allow them to transfer, then you got to allow these schools to be able to reload on the fly. And that's essentially what's going on here.
I'll tell you, too, though, that this really lends to seeing college football cuts.
Oh, yeah. No, that's the other point, too. Like, again, these are one-year scholarships. Everybody thinks they're 4 years or 5 years guaranteed. They are renewed every single year. And you're going to get to a point now because you can, if you cut a guy, then you had to be worried about, well, look, I can't really replace him immediately. It's going to take a little bit of time. Now coaches can say, yeah, you know what? You're not getting it done. You need to go somewhere else to play and not renew a scholarship.
I was shocked by the number of players that were, I guess we'd call it, relieved of their duties at BYU after spring ball. Partly at the end of spring ball and after spring ball, there were a lot of guys that were moved on their way. We talked about the spring roster. What was it? 130 something, or
it was pretty crazy.
Was it 137? Yeah. I can't remember the exact number. I just remember looking at it and thinking, how many linebackers they got in that room? How many offensive linemen? It was shocking how many guys they had, and that comes down to cutting guys. And when you're now allowing a reload. And those are a year-to-year. And I'm not saying this specifically for BYU because I don't know what they do with their scholarships. But, yeah, you're going to see kids get bad information at the end of a football season, potentially.
Well, and
or
I
bad
think,
news, I mean.
I think what most coaches, I think, and you can correct me if other guys are wrong, but I think for the most part, coaches are going to talk to players at the end of spring ball, and I think that's when you see the big wave of it, because there's a lot of evaluation goes on there. And they're going to say, look, we offered you a scholarship. We will honor that scholarship if you so desire to stay here. But just know you're now a junior or you're, you know, and when fall camp breaks, you're going to go work with the scout guys and you're never going to see the field and you're never going to see the field again your senior year. So you can stay here or we've got connections in the Big Sky. We've got connections here. We will find a home for you where you can go and you can play and you can have some opportunities. And you will essentially tell that kid, hey, you know what? The writing's on the wall. It's not going to work out for you. So go. And then there's going to be other coaches that are going to say, hey, guess what? You're not going to play here and I'm not renewing your scholarships. I don't think a lot of those coaches are going to be around.
No.
I think for the most part, they'll take that first approach. But if you're a kid and you're not playing, you better make sure that you're going to class and you're staying out of trouble because they could use those two things to boot you out of there as well.
Well, sadly, this is a result of college football becoming big business.
Yes.
And sadly, now that you can make money off your name, image, and likeness, and it really is becoming a business, I think that that's the way it should be run. And I do think there are going to be coaches that are going to be upfront and honest and kind of put the pressure on the kid saying, you're just not going to play here. If you want to stick it out, we're going to leave the scholarship in your hands because they don't want that big negative cloud hanging over them of, oh, that's the staff that'll just cut a kid. But I do think that they'll continue to put pressure on these guys to perform. And then even sadder than that, I agree with it. Because this is where we now are. This is where we've allowed ourselves to get with this one free transfer and the amount of money that these kids can make. It's business.
Look, okay, I am, for the most part, there's a lot of things about the NIL I don't like, but for the most part, I'm okay with a kid making money. He should be able to cut a commercial for and get some free food from a place. Totally fine with that. I'm totally fine with a one free transfer. But with that, I think also needs to come some other accountability on the other end. And I don't want 2 years from now some, you know, outcry of kids being like, hey, I'm getting cut. They don't want me. Where's the loyalty? No, you can transfer anytime you want. You can make money. When you come to this next level and you get all these other good things, guess what? A coach, he's going to have a right to cut you. And what was it, that volleyball coach from somewhere in the South cut the entire team?
Yeah. Yeah,
cut
the whole team. She came in and took the whole roster.
It's a little dirty, and it's going to get working against her in negative recruiting. But if you can leave after 1 year, or if you can leave any time and go anywhere else, then I should have the right to cut you.
Well, I'm telling you, Scotty, through my 5 years at BYU, I would never call out names, but I could probably name 12 guys that didn't deserve their scholarship.
Yeah.
And that's a sad thing to say, but every year, and we had a linebacker in particular – that was a real jerk, and he would tell people right to their face, give up your scholarship. You're not worth it. You are wasting a scholarship.
I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, he had zero couth.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.